All right, so let's get, I want to get into the working group. Obviously, you two have your fingers in a climate health related research, but how did a working group form? So tell me about how it formed and then sort of the mission of the group.
The group really formed out of a series of disparate but connected conversations around climate and health. And Jim Fox, the director of NEMAC, was really instrumental in making those connections. But what we saw is that many of us have interests and are working in a variety of ways around the topic of climate and health. And we felt like there was a way that we could coordinate those efforts and do more than any of us could just individually accomplish on our own. So the group formed in May of last year, and 3 weeks after forming, we put forward a National Academy of Sciences proposal and have hit the ground running ever since.
Well, I'm Jen's research partner in crime, so I followed her along. And for me as a researcher, I want to provide, you know, meaningful research to my community. So I see the group as a way to provide evidence-based solutions to some of our climate health problems, and to work with actual practitioners who are trying to make these impacts in our area. So it's a great way for me as an academic to disseminate my research and to make a meaningful contribution to my community.
Tell me who makes up the group and what are you setting out to do?
We have this really diverse group of public health professionals and thought leaders in the region, as well as scientists and students, and even individuals working in the private sector. We have county health officials from Buncombe County Health. Universities involved include my institute, North Carolina Institute of Climate Studies at NC State. App State is part. We've got Western Carolina University represented, and even UNC Gillings School of Public Health. We have several students that have joined that are part of that program. And while the group is really new and in its early stages, we're adding new members for each meeting. A central issue that we've begun rallying around is engaging clinicians and the public health community in this region around the topic of climate and health as a conversation starter. What do they need to know? What do they not know? And where can we go from here?
Oh, that's a good one. One
idea that we've had as a group is this. We have, as a member, the Western North Carolina Health Network. It's this really phenomenal group. They're an alliance between local public health departments and hospital systems, and they bring these two groups together around a community health assessment where individuals, public health leaders in each county of the state, identify social determinants of health that are driving health trends in our area, as well as they develop strategic plans to implement at the county and regional level. And so one idea that our group's been tossing around is using this existing network as an avenue to introduce climate as an environmental stressor and begin to engage these local health officials around the issue of climate and use it as a mechanism to potentially develop more strategic and adaptive planning.
So what are some of the things here in Western North Carolina? Help the audience understand, what does climate change and the impact to health mean now and maybe when you're looking in the future? Jen, I'll start with you.
To understand how climate is impacting our region, I think we really need to take a step back and look at what we've observed for the state of North Carolina. And there are really two prevailing trends. One, it's getting warmer. And two, it's likely to be wetter. So for temperature, we've observed historically warm summer temperatures as well as nighttime temperatures over the last decade. And projections, or models that help us see into the future, show that North Carolina can anticipate historically unprecedented warming by mid to late century. For precipitation, the trends are not as clear, But again, those projections, the models that help us see into the future, say that we should anticipate more extreme precipitation events in the form of heavier rainfall or even longer drought periods. So that's what's happening at a state level. Recently, NEMAC, the National Environmental Modeling and Analysis Center, partnered with local officials to put forward the Asheville Climate Resilience Plan. And this group identified 5 climate stressors: flooding, extreme heat, wildfires, drought, and landslides that are causing us problems now and we will continue to experience in the future. So if you take what we're observing both at the state and local level, here's how those changes in climate will impact health. The National Climate Assessment, the 4th National Climate Assessment, a key finding states that all Americans are impacted by climate change. We understand that this is happening now and will actually get worse in the future. Climate changes our humans' exposure to extreme heat, flooding, and other extreme weather events, as well as changes in tick and mosquito, food, and waterborne illness. And so these are some of the issues that we're looking at in the here and now. And I'll say, when you think about how climate impacts health, we have to understand that climate's really a risk multiplier, whereby those existing health disparities or social stressors like racism, poverty, are working to interact with environmental stressors like urbanization, declines in urban tree canopy, and making the interaction between those two stressors worse, resulting in humans being more vulnerable to climate. Super nuanced. It's super involved. It's a really hard topic to talk about, like, broadly.
Maggie, I want to ask you, when you join this group and you're looking at some of the things, what strikes you? Is there an area that you want to jump on as far as research or?
Definitely. Well, I'm more of a researcher, and so I've been looking at this intersection of climate and health for a while, and I have, you know, research findings. We both do, Jen and I both do, that are for Western North Carolina, and we want to find a way to provide these our findings to practitioners, to public health officials. And so that's why I'm really excited about this group. And I guess building off what Jen was saying, we do have, you know, some very specific health impacts for Western North Carolina. Again, what NEMAC has identified, extreme heat. We see heat-related illness in North Carolina, but we see it at a different, it has a different relationship than other parts of the state. It's at lower temperatures. It's among a population that typically doesn't have access to AC. Other parts of the state have really high prevalence of AC. We don't, some parts of Western North Carolina don't have the same adaptive mechanisms that other parts of the state do. You know, they don't have AC or they experience energy poverty. They can't afford to run their AC, and so they can't mitigate their heat exposure, and they end up succumbing to a heat-related illness, which could be, you know, heat exhaustion, heat syncope, which would be heat fainting, and in the most severe cases, heat stroke. Here in the high country where I'm from in Boone, we're seeing a massive increase in Lyme disease in both the human and dog populations. It's a real problem. It's increased like fourfold in the last decade. And Lyme disease is kind of one of those tricky pathways Jed was touching on. It's an indirect, you know, it's an indirect relationship. It's a complicated system. And the reason Lyme disease, you know, is related to climate is because of ticks, which spread Lyme disease, and they're sensitive to climate conditions, and they thrive in these milder winters and more humid conditions in the summer. And we're seeing, you know, a southward spread of this Lyme disease into our area. Other impacts in our area that we've been working on include the the wildfire events we saw in 2016, they were really unprecedented for our area. It's something we usually don't see. It was unfortunate. They corresponded with a severe drought, and that drought occurred in the fall season when there was a lot of leaf litter. So the conditions were really ripe for this wildfire event. And Jen and I are just now getting started looking at some of these drought impacts and the connection to health. We have a study that we're launching looking at this relationship this summer.
So let's talk about some of the people who are most susceptible in the Western North Carolina region to climate change health effects.
So climate change doesn't impact all people equally. Just as what we would expect to see on the health side, those social determinants of health, race, income inequality, people who are insured or underinsured or don't have jobs will be the most impacted due to climate. For example, low-income houses in our region who are impacted by an extreme weather event don't have the economic means to bounce back relatively quickly. And just as Maggie mentioned, during periods of extreme heat or a heat wave, these households don't have the financial means to crank up their AC. So those are an example of one group that would be particularly impacted.
If you just look at the population level, some of the most vulnerable groups are the young and the old, you know, who can't thermoregulate or respond to environmental health stressors as quickly as some of the working age population, people with underlying medical conditions. These are the ones that are also susceptible, you know, to extreme weather events, whether that's extreme heat or extreme cold. But what I think personally, just growing up in Western North Carolina and being a researcher in Western North Carolina, I think it's, for us, it's probably that rural population that Jen was touching on. They seem to be particularly vulnerable. We keep on seeing them time over in each of our studies. We see them being highlighted as one of the most at-risk populations in our area.